My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me. And I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. How about yourself?
All right. And in the state of Massachusetts.
Hey, everyone. This is Abe here.
Abe, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. So next week, Eric, you'll be in a hotel. So it'll be New York, will you be in?
No, I'll actually be all the way to Massachusetts at that point.
Oh, which hotel?
The one the convention's in.
Oh, so you're going there on Thursday night?
Yes.
All right. And Eric, what is that convention?
I'm attending the convention, but this is also just a vacation for me. So I'm getting out of Dodge for about a week.
Excellent. And what's that convention that myself, you, and Mike will be not only there with a table, but we will be interviewing famous guests?
We will be at ScareCon New England, which is June. damn it. I'm not looking at a calendar. Give me a date. Give me the dates, Phil.
7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th or something?
7th, 8th, and 9th, I think it is.
Oh, yes. There you go. Yes. So we will be there. We got a table. So you can come to our table, say hello. Mike, myself, and Eric will, along with the Dorkening podcast, will be interviewing a number of the famous guests. And we will also be participating in the podcast awards show, which, by the way, has one podcast that's friends of our podcast, the Horror Mafia podcast, is nominated, I think, for three categories, long form, humor, and best podcast. So good luck to them.
Woo!
Yeah, and it should be a fun time. It's a 3-day convention. It opens up at 3 or 4 on Friday, and then all Saturday, and then until about 3 or 4 on Sunday. What are those famous guests there, Mike?
I don't have it called up. I know you have Elvira there. You have much of the cast and crew from the Phantasm film series. You have Heather Langenkamp, and I'm trying to remember the name of the other actress from...
Oh, Felicity Rose.
No, from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Amanda Weiss.
Felicity Rose is probably going to be there. Let's see, who else we got?
Billy Zane.
Oh, Billy Zane from Titanic and The Phantom, and what was
Scrunch,
that movie?
Scrunch, and I have a bunch of this.
David Tales Howard Thornton, Kirk, right? A.K.A. Art the Clown, will be there.
Right.
And he's actually going to have a photo op in costume. So you can have a photo op with Art the Clown. So
director.
I actually signed up for that one. I want a picture with Art the Clown.
Excellent. How much was that one?
Ooh, it's not cheap.
Really?
Like $60 something.
I've heard, in costume, that's not that unusual. I think that's what I paid for Sid Haig last year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go. But yeah, Billy Zane of Survival Island, Scorned, Deadcom, he's going to be there. And I guess they're going to do a screening of Deadcom with him in the audience. So
they're going to do a bunch of screenings. If you want to know what's going on for the whole weekend, head to scarecon.com. There's a schedule link at the top of the page that'll give you a layout of what is happening when. There's also a link to view all the celebrity guests and a separate link for all the photo ops that are going to be available. So go to scarecon.com if you want all the deets. We will be there.
And oh, you're that's the most important
to,
thing.
Interact with some of our listeners.
And
there'll be a photo op with me, Mike, and Eric, and we're free.
That's true. We are free. We can't charge.
Or if you want, for $60, you can get a photo op with me, Phil, Eric, and Art the Clown.
There you go.
Or for $60, you can get a photo op without us.
That's right.
If you pay us, we'll leave you alone.
If you want to meet up with us, we'll be there. Just swing up by our tables, come to any of the interviews and panels and whatnot, and you also can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com. Mike, what is this podcast? How can people find us and such?
This is the Dark Discussions podcast. You can find us on the Dark Discussions website, www.darkdiscussions.com. All of our episodes can be streamed there for free, or you can download us through any one of your normal podcast providers, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or some of the other ones.
Overcast, Podbean, Apple
Podcasts, yep.
Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher,
all that stuff. Basically, wherever you find podcasts, you can find us.
Yeah, wherever the good podcasts are sold, that we somehow sneaked in on those two.
That's right. That's right. Yep, absolutely. Two-time nominee for the Rondo Awards, which is run by...
that's right. That happened.
That's right. Which is run by someone of importance at USA Today, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
So that is always good. Also, me, Abe, and two special guests, Kevin Letts and Barrett Heisner, will be coming out with a Dark Discussions podcast episode on the Pet Sematary book late
June.
Keep
on saying that.
And Mike and Eric, you guys are invited if you want to join us. And then,
I thought we already did a podcast on the book. Because we were trying to talk a movie, and you kept talking about the book.
And then me and Mike and anybody else on the podcast that wants to join us are going to be doing Black Summer Season 1, the Netflix horror series, later in June or July. So keep.
It's a nice day for Black Summer.
I'll join if I have a chance to watch it before you record, but I don't know if that's happened the way things are going.
It's not that long. All the episodes are under an hour. The last one's only 25 minutes or so.
How many are there?
There's only eight episodes. Yeah.
Oh, then that's doable.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a four-hour movie, basically. You can pretty much blow through it.
So most of the episodes are an hour, but the last one's only 25 minutes?
No. Yeah.
Most of them are like 45 minutes, and the last one is about half that.
Huh.
Yeah. And the last one is really... kind of just action, because most of the story is about them trying to get to a place, and at the end they are kind of get to that place and are doing their final run through the zombie horde. And I think if they made it any longer than 20 minutes or so, it might have gotten tedious.
It's pretty cool too, because you have friendly fire that happens, and then you have
wait till you're recording the episode.
Yeah. Right. So hopefully, Eric, you'll be able to join us, Abe as well. It's Netflix Season 1 on Black Summer. Damn good show. Even my wife liked it, and she's not a horror fan. So
she wouldn't like my favorite line.
Yes, she did, and Mike did too. It was like everybody's noticed that line. It was hilarious. I had to pause
it. Notice it as much as you did, though.
I was.
It was hilarious. I don't know why you didn't notice it.
I didn't notice it. It was my wife that did, and I had to rewind it and play it. I was like, oh my God, that's great. Best line ever. And we'll discuss that when we come out with that episode. All right. I think that's it. We can probably get into our episode tonight. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we are going to be talking about the new movie currently in theaters, starring Elizabeth Banks, Brightburn.
Also stars, co-stars, Roy from The Office, also known as David Denman.
Actually, it's David Denman, also known as Roy from The Office.
Fair enough. The film is produced by James Gunn. This is his baby. He's been working on this for a bit. And then it was written by Brian Gunn and Mark Gunn, which is his first cousin and his brother. But of course, the most important thing is that it stars Roy from The Office.
No, the most important thing is that it stars Badger from Breaking Bad.
Yep. Yeah, he's in it too. But yes, it's not surprising that David Denman and Elizabeth Banks star in this because Elizabeth Banks has worked with James Gunn in the past in Slither. And David Denman is obviously a friend of James Gunn because James Gunn knows pretty much everybody from The Office because he used to be married to Pam from The Office and in the past has also cast such characters as Dwight from The Office in one of his films, Super. So he's got a connection there and he brings in Roy from The Office, or once again named
David Denman is the actual actor's name.
Yes, yes, but Roy from The Office, it sounds cool.
No, David Denman is the actual actor's name.
You're ruining my fun, Rick.
Yes, intentionally, because you're obsessed with The Office, and it disturbs the rest of us.
Oh, jeez. I watched four episodes last night, as a matter of fact.
I'm surprised. And I watched,
how many times have you been through this show?
I think he's on his seventh time path through.
Which, I want to point out, it's a show that's, 15 years old now?
About that.
Yeah, but he just discovered it like 6 months ago.
That's correct.
So he watches the whole thing once a month.
He's an office junkie.
That's correct. That is correct. It has taken over from Far Cry 5.
Oh.
Well, the problem is that Phil's allowed to work from home, so he just misses cubicles.
No, this is. I can't do any of that until after 7:30 when the kids go to bed, and then I get to watch the office between 7:30 to 1 o'clock.
Yep. Oh, my God.
Yep, it's a marathon.
That's a lot.
A marathon. And before that, it was Far Cry 5 from 7:30 to 1 o'clock every day.
Well, I guess Phil doesn't know about that saying about variety being the spice of life.
Yeah, whatever.
What are you talking about? You watched four different episodes.
That's exactly right. That's right. That's right. Yep. Let's see. Which episodes did I watch last night?
Nobody cares.
Yeah, no one cares. Well, me and you could talk about it for a bit. But yeah, obviously the people listening to this podcast do not. So let's discuss a couple of things about how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And then, Mike, we can bring you in to discuss the James Gunn bit about how he was originally supposed to promote it and all that crap, because I know you know that story. But before we do that, let's go to you, Abe. How did you hear about this film, and what did you think about it?
So I heard about it through the advertisements. That, you know,
Abe, can you get closer to your mic, please?
I am as close to the mic because I'm wearing the mic.
Ah, okay.
You have a shitty mic. I'm sorry.
Hold on.
What else are you wearing, Abe?
Shut up. So I heard about this film through circulation of advertisements and, you know, being mentioned here and there. Especially it came up during our discussions for the films that we'd be keeping our eye open on for 2019. I actually watched it today just to keep everything fresh. And overall, I think it succeeds in what it attempts to do in terms of telling a dark, a dark retelling of the Superman origin story.
You sound perfect now. Excellent.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. James Gunn, I think, succeeds in at least getting the basic idea out. And I thought it was well shot. I thought it had some cool visuals here and there. But I kind of was... Overall, I felt that my feelings for the film were mixed. I thought the performances were good. I thought Elizabeth Banks was really strong. I couldn't stand her character, but I thought her performance was really strong. I actually connected more with David Denham's character.
Rory from The Office.
Yeah, I knew you were going to do that, you son of a bitch. But one thing that I think kind of took me out of the film was it kind of induced a sense of apathy in me. Aside from the character of Kyle, most of the characters in the film were kind of unsympathetic or really stupid. And the fact that the superhero child in question was so powerful, it kind of created a very unwinnable situation, so it was mostly just watching things play out and go through the motions. That's one of the issues that a lot of stories run into when they have an antagonist that is too powerful and without pulling some kind of bullshit, can't do anything against them. Sometimes this works, some other times it doesn't, but this really came to the case where you essentially have Superman running amok. There's not a whole lot that can be done, so I'm really just kind of sitting there watching characters get butchered left and right. And it's kind of, okay, you know, things happen. I think the stuff leading up to the kid's psychotic rampage was more interesting than the actual rampage itself. I thought it kind of reminded me of the premise of we need to talk about Kevin mixed with a dark superhero origin story. It's overall a confident film. I thought it was, you know, I think people who are looking for like a dark superhero origin story could enjoy it. I wasn't blown away by it, but I didn't dislike it or nothing. So overall, okay. And I'm interested to see what we can discuss when we dissect it.
All right, very good. For me, I heard about this film through the same, well, not actually, but a little different, but mostly through the 2019, what we are looking forward to, episode of Dark Discussions. It's one of the films that I discovered online. And so it was definitely one I was curious about, especially since Ray from The Office stars in it, and that's very important. So I saw it this weekend. I think it was I don't know when it was. It was sometime over the weekend. And it was Saturday night, actually. Yeah, Saturday night. There was only three people that showed up besides myself in the theater, which was somewhat surprising, though I had read that it was going to possibly underperform. They were expecting 12 to 14 million, and by the time Saturday rolled on, they were saying it would possibly go down to 8 or 9 in at least U.S. audiences. I actually felt the movie was pretty solid. I enjoyed it a lot. I do agree with Abe. Roy from The Office was easily the best character. He's the guy that I related to. He was only probably the smartest character, while the rest were bozos or trying to pretend that what they were seeing wasn't unfolding. But Roy from The Office most certainly knew what was going on. The story was interesting. It had me entertained throughout. There was no point in the movie that I was bored or saying, when is this over? I would like to say I loved it, but I don't want to overhype the film because it is one of those films that may just work for me more than it worked for other people. But all in all, it's a solid film and high recommend and probably worth seeing at the theaters, though it'll probably be gone quick. I do agree with Abe that the lead-up was better than the rampage itself. Like a lot of films, you know, the ending obviously doesn't live up to the rest of the film, though it's still a pretty solid ending. Mike?
Yeah, I remember there was at some point the trailer for this dropped, I don't know, 9 months ago, 6 months ago, which is, I guess, how I first officially learned about it. And I liked it there. You had mentioned in the podcast last week, and I verified it, that it only had like a $6 million budget, and that reframed my expectation for this. I was expecting it to be, given especially that it was coming out right before Memorial Day weekend. You know, we're in the middle now of what the movie studios think is the summer season. So I was expecting it to be a bigger budget, so I wasn't surprised that it was scaled down and that you didn't get that big a finale at the ending. We had technical problems to start with. They showed the wrong movie. Booksmart.
Oh, that's actually supposed to be pretty good.
It's getting great reviews.
Oh, it's getting great reviews, but
different movie.
But yeah. Remember offline we were talking about that Venn diagram, you know, and the Booksmart and
the Brightburn and the Booksmart Venn diagram does not overlap.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, oh, well, you know, I was going to go see this next, so I'll just sit through that. Now, thankfully, we're not, you know, in the age of the old real film projectors, because then we really would have been fucked. But it's just digital, so they just accidentally clicked on the wrong thing, and so we had to restart it. But I was, like, the only one to leave the theater to point this out. Everyone just, I think, was thinking it was a trailer for Booksmart. They just sat there and were watching it. I don't understand that. And then for whatever reason, they claim that it didn't have closed captioning because my wife uses one of those closed captioning devices, because she's hard of hearing. They claim that it didn't have closed captioning done, but I've certainly seen it advertised as having closed captioning. So I think the theater just fucked up and didn't want to admit it. But other than that, once we got past that glitch that caused me to miss a little bit of the very beginning of the film, I enjoyed the film. I liked it. I have some minor issues with it, one of which is just isn't a problem with the film. It's just a problem with I would have like to see something different, but I don't hold that against the movie itself. And I'm going to be annoyed because they, you know, I have a Pavlovian response that now, having seen the way they ended it, I really want a sequel. It's just my conditioning, even though we probably never will get one. $6 million budget, it's made its money back. I know that. It will turn a profit. We'll see if it gets any kind of a following on home video, though. That'll probably determine if and when there would be a sequel. But so that's all I really want to say at the moment.
Okay. Well, how did Pam like it?
She liked it. I don't think she was overjoyed by it. And we watched the movie. She ran off to a poker game and then got violently ill for the next 4 days. So we really haven't had a chance to discuss her insights into the into the making of Brightburn.
All right, Eric.
I found out about this movie actually listening to the Dark Discussions Looking Forward to 2019 episode. I was not able to be a part of that episode, and those are actually the only ones I listened to, because I don't need to listen to the ones I'm on, because I was there, and I know what happened.
So you have no idea how much Phil is editing you out of context.
I might not be in the episodes, for all I know. Maybe Phil's just like, fuck this guy. He's always making fun of me about The Office. So that's where I heard about it.
Eric, you said fuck this guy. That's what she said.
Oh.
So that anyway. Wasn't you, Eric, who was saying I love The Office too. That wasn't you saying that.
No, that was not me. Or he may have like cut snippets from other things I've said and put it together like that. That Phil is a tricky one. But anyway. This movie was pretty much exactly what I was expecting. I was not surprised on any level. I enjoyed it. I was entertained. I thought it was executed well for the most part. There was one moment I really didn't care for that I'll get to later after we're in spoilers. But it wasn't a major disaster. There are a couple of good gore moments. I didn't know Badger was in this movie, so I was very excited to see him show up. Because he's way better than Roy from The Office.
fight!
I like the movie. I'm not gonna say it's the best film ever, but it's decent. I wouldn't kill yourself to try and get it in the theater, but I would watch it at some point.
All right, very well. All right, before we get into various things about it and then the spoiler part of the podcast. Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki.
Sorry. I lost my tabs. Here we go. What if a child from another world crash landed on Earth, but instead of becoming a hero to mankind, he proved to be something far more sinister?
All right. Very good. Very good. That doesn't say too much, but enough. Now, Mike, this is kind of interesting because, like you said, it's a small budget film and whatnot. So it's kind of surprising that James Gunn was planning to really like make a big deal of it when he was supposed to talk about it before the fallout that happened to him. What was that? He was. This was the, like, quote-unquote, big news that he was going to announce when...
Well, he had a panel spot at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, last year. And that was literally the, like, right before or when... I think it was that weekend that the scandal broke, that someone discovered stuff that he had publicly tweeted years ago, and Disney fired him for tweets they already knew about. Yeah, we've already.
Well, we don't know if they knew about it. But
no, they did.
Sure about that?
Yeah, pretty sure, because it was there were public knowledge. It was there. He'd already apologized for some of the things he'd said before that, but then someone decided to troll him and dig it up again. Perfect. And because we're in a little bit more of a sensitive time than we were just 7 or 8 years ago, he ended up getting shit canned before he ended up getting rehired. Nevertheless, it was in the middle of that shit storm that he was supposed to be doing the thing for Brightburn. Now, he only produced the film. His brother wrote it. Cousin, whatever, where I am, sometimes it's the same thing.
There you go.
But it didn't get the coverage exposure it might have gotten then. On the other hand, maybe it got some different exposure because James Gunn's name is attached to it. I don't know if that would have necessarily helped going up against Aladdin, because it got slaughtered, as did everybody else just about this weekend. So I don't know. It's gotten so that's really all there is to it. I mean, there's no controversy about the film itself. He only produced the film. I never heard anybody since this was being released. Oh, I'm not doing this because James Gunn made offensive jokes. I haven't heard anything like that. I've heard nothing, no blowback. I mean, I'm not saying there hasn't been any. I'm just saying if it's there, I haven't heard it. So yeah, I don't see the big deal. And again, even if he was like horrible, you know, even if he had gone into, I don't know, Polanski territory or Kevin Spacey territory or something, he only produced the film, right? He didn't direct it. He didn't write it. You know, he just put the money up for it. So, you know, I don't know that it would really drive a lot of people away from that either.
That is interesting that you brought that up because he was supposed to announce it at San Diego Comic Con and talk all about it and all that. And obviously that all fell through. I mean, even Aladdin was created a little differently. They covered up Jasmine, unlike in the cartoon where she wore like a crop top and all these other things. So yeah, times have changed most certainly. So it is a curious era that we live in, unfortunately. Let's see. I guess we can talk about general things. One thing I wanted to ask everybody is, I assume most of us have seen the movie Chronicle. That's a first person, whatever, Blair Witch type of film. But a lot of people are comparing that film with this film here. What's your thoughts, anybody? Eric?
Well, I haven't...
Go on.
I haven't seen the film. I know the premise, the idea there was like, I think three or four friends get superpowers, and one actually becomes corrupted by it. That's the general idea I know about it. Aside from one of them going crazy, I don't really see a whole lot of similarities. Then again, I didn't see the film.
What about you, Eric?
I mean, I guess I can kind of understand why people are making the comparison, but it doesn't hold up 100%. They're different stories, but I get it.
Yeah, Chronicle is a low-budget superhero film of sorts, superhero origin story, and superhero for one character, supervillain for another, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all that different, except that it's an original property, so you don't necessarily...
Oh, and it had a love story in it, too, right? The girl.
Right. But, yeah. I mean, it's not really all that... It's a low-budget superhero origin story, and as we've seen in a lot of superhero origin stories...
That was a $12 million film, believe it or not, Chronicle.
So it's even more expensive than Brightburn, and, you know, and given the, whatever it is, 7 or 8 years since that came out, you know, it's probably even more than that. But it's really kind of... That is a pretty typical superhero format in that we've seen a lot of movies of late where the hero's origin is tied to the villain's origin. So it really kind of plays a little bit more by the book, where this is obviously a deliberate riff on Superman. If you were not paying close attention to the trailer to see the name on the mailbox, you know, you could be completely fooled into thinking it was a trailer for a Superman film before things started getting really dark. There is no hero in this film, right? There's no opposite number. It's just sort of a different commentary. It's a, what if Superman was an evil little shit?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. I don't get the mailbox reference because the name's Briar, isn't it?
So I said, if you weren't paying attention and couldn't see the name on the mailbox, I'm pretty sure it was the Superman Returns trailer. It might have even been in the Man of Steel trailer where there's a shot of the Kent mailbox on the farm, right, in the trailer for that. So, you know, it's clearly aping a lot of those moments in that first trailer. And again, if you weren't paying attention, if you missed the name on there, you might have thought this was a Superman film. at first.
Right. Assuming you're familiar with the Superman trailers, I am not. But I see your point.
Well, you're familiar with Superman.
Yeah, but not the trailers.
Well, if you watch the trailer, you would know what I'm talking about.
Fair enough. Right. And obviously James Gunn and his brother and cousin and the director, who I did not name, who's worked on many James Gunn films, David Yarovesky. They're probably all genre nerds anyway, so it wouldn't surprise me that they were aping or giving little nods to Superman,
well,
various other films.
Well, that's the whole point, right? This is your cheap Chinese knockoff Superman, right? But the problem is there's lead in the paint on the toy and it's killing people.
Yes, that's true. Yes, that's true. Or the dog treat is poison and all right. Your animals are dying or something. Yes. We've heard all those terrible stories. Okay. So, any other items anybody wanted to bring up, before we get into spoilers and all that other good stuff? So what did you guys think of, Roy from The Office? He's awesome, isn't he? Anyway,
he's his own character with his head on his shoulders. I mean, I think that was one of my issues, is that just how everybody else was going, fucking moron, especially but he was at least trying to do things,
right? At least he was trying.
Well, yeah. he had clearly never seen a Superman movie before.
I think his character, when he was stupid, it was because he didn't know what to do.
We'll get into
because
it.
he can't go to the cops.
The character by Banks, I thought she was a fucking buffoon. I mean, most of the problems continue to spiral down.
She's a mother.
She's a mother. I don't care.
Well, yeah. You're not a mother.
You don't care about your mother?
You likely will never
be one.
What
kind of monster are you?
Shut up.
Well, you know, her brother-in-law gets killed. I'm more with
Well, she doesn't put the pieces together until the end.
You better throw a spoiler flag up.
No, she's in denial.
Right, but people are often in denial. That's why people do stupid
things.
Throw
a spoiler flag up.
I've never visited.
You're getting into it, so
no, I never
we need
visited.
To throw a spoiler flag up. Spoiler flag up. Spoilers. Okay, go.
All right, so we'll talk about everything and anything now. Okay, before we get into all that, because that's further into the film, I guess we should set up the film. So, Eric, what's going on here? What's going on here?
Evil Superman.
We have a hot mama that wants to get pregnant, basically.
What?
We have a hot mama that wants to get pregnant.
I guess that's the way you would look at it.
they are talking about getting
There's
pregnant.
There's a married couple
and
who wants
Elizabeth
to have a child and because
hot.
She's infertile.
We think she's infertile. It could be the other way around.
Right. She's got 17 books on infertility, but it's only a theory.
It could be the other way around.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, I'm fairly certain that she's infertile.
Okay.
Because she's the one that really, 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 really wanted a kid. And the husband, he's on board with having a kid, but I don't think he was half as enthusiastic about it.
Right. He wasn't anti, but, I mean, he was like, yeah, sure, whatever.
He's doing to make her happy.
Yeah. Yeah, a happy wife is a happy life, and he understands that. Yes.
Now, I will say that I did enjoy... I did enjoy David Denman's performance.
Roy from The Office?
David Denman's performance. He totally sold the salt of the earth husband dude. He portrayed that really well.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think, you know, no pun intended, but he was the most down to earth of the cast.
No doubt about it. So the film takes place in Kansas. In a town or a county called Brightburn. They live on a very rural farm, so the town obviously is very rural as well. The film is actually filmed in Georgia, as most films are.
It's basically a total ripoff. Like, if you've seen the Christopher Reeve Superman from the 80s, it totally rips off the first half hour of that movie. Only the family's name is Breyer.
They didn't come up with the story. I mean, that story has been around for decades before the Christopher Reeve movie.
I'm just saying the way it's presented on screen, it's like, yeah, very, very similar.
But it's...
I would concur.
That's the point of the film.
I know.
Right. And, you know, this isn't something like, you know, where they're trying to pretend that nobody will... They won't notice. They'll think we're being original. You know, anyone who's old enough to go see this R-rated film probably is old enough to have seen at least one Superman movie at some point in their life, or read a Superman comic, or seen a cartoon. So that
I'm
is
not saying
that
they were trying to be sneaky. Yeah. I was just talking about it because of the audio
podcast.
I'm with
Eric on this. Eric was just making an observation. I don't think he was trying to say they ripped off Superman and were scumbags for doing it. I think he was just.
I think it was implied, but anyway.
No, you're just a comic nerd getting overblown about comics.
What's that, Eric? What's that comic nerd from The Simpsons? What's his name?
He's called the comic book guy.
Book guy.
All right, so I'm going to start calling Mike comic book guy.
He's used to it.
But yes,
like you'd be the first.
Yeah, but basically, the first
worst part is, insult ever.
Oh lordy. But yes, basically, the first part of this film is kind of what you would see as the typical beginning of the Superman's origin story. Child from space crashes down, kind family takes him in, and the kid grows up to slowly begin to realize his hidden potential. It's only when he begins to realize, start to learn about this potential, that things go completely fucking south.
Well, and here's the one part of this movie I thought was kind of original and the one thing I didn't see coming, which was that he didn't like show signs of evil growing up. It's not like they could have seen it coming when he was 2 or 5 or 7. It's when he's 12, and it's not necessarily because of who he is. He starts receiving messages from the spacecraft he came in, telling him to take the world.
Yeah.
So it's implied, at least to me, that this was actually... the plan of whoever sent him was to send him, let him establish a presence here, grow up, and then trigger him when he hits maturity, or at least mature enough, to use his superpowers to take over the world.
Well, it also kind of shows, too, that when he realizes that he's more than the people around him, that he begins to develop the superiority complex.
Very quickly.
Yeah. Right.
Very quickly.
Well,
one line he says that he's saying to his aunt, who's also the counselor at the school, I found out that I'm something better than everybody.
Yeah.
Right. My, that was one of my issues, Eric.
Okay.
And that's an issue, though, that's of a difference of what I wanted or what I was... where I thought they were going to go, as opposed to the story they were telling. So I can't fault them for that.
So what were you expecting?
I think it feels to me a little cheap to do it as he went bad because he was sort of genetically programmed to do it. Now they need to establish it, right? And they have the classic classroom scene where the whole point of the classroom scene is for the teacher to state the theme of the film. You know, where they're talking about hive insects and the difference between a wasp and a bee. And, even when you look at his mask, that there's sort of like something similar to an insect's mandibles and the way it's stitched together.
Right. Yeah.
Out. So they're going for this whole insect hive concept. And that's fine. That's the story they told. When I heard the idea of an evil Superman story, I kind of liked the idea that it would be...
He's a sociopath?
Not even that he's a sociopath, which is, what would it be like for a person to actually have that much power handed to them? And I have to think, what would be the worst possible age to give a human being that much power?
And
it would probably be about that age, right? I mean, because you're just starting to come into your own powers, and they're already kind of little shits who are full of themselves around that time anyway.
Right.
You know, so the idea that someone that just basic human psychology, it's not hard to believe that a good kid could suddenly find out, because they all think they're special. We all did, right? They're trying to prove they're special, and Howie finds out, fuck yeah, I'm literally super special.
Super special.
Holy shit, I can look at all the crap I can do. You go ahead and try to send me to bed without my supper.
Yes. Well, this actually reminds me of the new Gar War. Spoilers, since we're in spoiler territory things. In the new Gar War game, Kratos' son, Atreus, eventually is told of his godhood. And his kid's only about like maybe 14 years old, 12. And he, too, starts to get a superiority complex and thinks he's better and more powerful and be able to do anything that he ever wanted to do. But beforehand, he was actually willing to help other people, even spirits of the dead and stuff like that. It's only after he learns of his superior power that he begins to change. He starts to improve and starts to learn from his mistakes because he has Kratos, who's also a god, to teach him. But it kind of really shows a sort of jump of what happens when someone that young is told of that kind of, has that kind of power revealed to them so soon.
Now, Mike, how did you think or prefer it to go then? I still don't understand what you were hoping for.
Well,
versus
the idea that it was simply a matter of free will, right? That it was just a matter of...
So if he was... He chose it because he suddenly got all this power and he just became a dink rather than a space alien or a spaceship programming him to...
Right. So the idea of power corrupting, you know, and part of it goes to the fact that I've always, as a comic book guy, I've always kind of defended the Superman character people say is boring, because I always think it's an interesting idea that here you have a guy who's got all the power in the world and never really uses it for selfish purposes, when we all know we totally would at the very least be X-ray visioning the girls' locker room, right?
Oh, for sure.
You know, that, you know, I don't know that I couldn't, like, heat vision the crap out of the little old lady in front of me in the self-checkout lane who still can't figure out how to punch the buttons to get her item in. You know, it just, you just get frustrated because, like, you're in a rush and somebody's trying to use a self-checkout.
Note to whoever, never give Mike superpowers.
But we've all had that, right? Road rage, you know, whatever it is. Your boss at work who pisses you off. You know, and so, you know, what kind of internal fortitude, what kind of character is it, you know, does that character, do you have to have to go through your life and never give in to that temptation?
Yeah.
And they've done stories where maybe he has, or done alternate universe stories, you know, like, well, what if Superman was landed in the Soviet Union, you know, and all these other things instead of landing in Kansas. So the idea of playing around with what makes you who you are is kind of goes back to the character's history and things they've played around with for decades. So the idea of, well, what would it be like to give another person those same powers in a different, because the family is the same, right? They're not bad parents.
No.
They're loving parents. They're a little slow on the uptake when their kid breaks bad.
Well, and I think if it weren't for the influence that he might have been okay.
Yeah.
Cause there's a scene towards the end of the movie where he tells his mother, I want to do good. And I believed him when he said that, but it's a little too late for that one.
Now, another way, sorry, you know, one thing I was expecting too when watching the film, in regards to what Mike was saying about him going bad, you know, I thought thinking at first that he was going to be shunned by the people around him, and suddenly snapped because of that, because of how different he was, rather than suddenly just being so violent that everyone has a reason to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is they, no one knows that he has superpowers.
Oh no, I'm
right?
saying another scenario. I thought expecting while watching, I thought people were going to all find out and become afraid of him.
Oh, so like an X-Men movie or something?
Yeah,
I
gotcha.
I kind of enjoyed the way that part of the reason that the dominoes fell the way they did is that his dad tried to give him a talk. And it didn't land right.
Not at all.
Because he's basically trying to tell his kid that it's okay to jerk off. the way he phrases it, he tells him that you're going to be looking at girls in school, whatever, and you'll have urges, and it's okay to act on those urges. So that makes it think it's okay for him to fly over to the girl's house and take a visit to her bedroom.
Wait, now I was just thinking, what happens when a boy who's super durable but with super strength tries to jerk off? What what could possibly go wrong there?
A lot of laundry.
Well, there's a thing that the father mistook, which was underneath the mattress, he and the mother find all these pictures, and some of them are pictures of hot, scantily clad women.
Yeah, but they're also pictures of viscera.
But then there's other pictures of exactly of internal organs and things of that nature. So the father, they're confused, but they choose to ignore the weird stuff and just go with the scantily clad woman pictures, and that's why he brings up that thing, you know, when they're hunting, he's talking about, you know, sexuality and the birds and the bees. But the problem is obviously there's more to it that even us, the audience, aren't 100% sure. But again, even if you did find those weird pictures of internal organs and stuff, I wouldn't necessarily think that the person that has those pictures is disturbed. It would be someone that's just curious, especially at that age, of internal organs and things of that nature. Because it's not like death pictures. If it was death pictures, then there would be a problem. Yeah.
I can't blame. I have to blame society, because society always tells you don't judge the person by their looks. Always judge them by what's inside. You know. So that's what he was just looking at there.
Ooh.
Now I do find it amazing. You know, that, you know, we started out with, you know, grunts and cave paintings and made it all the way through Shakespearean sonnets, and yet we still can't come up with a way to have the talk that isn't, like, unbelievably awkward.
Yeah.
There's, like, no one has ever – that'll be a Nobel Prize winner one day. Dad figures out how to give a talk that doesn't just suck, you know. And now, admittedly, he gave the worst possible – version of it I can think of, given the context. I don't know if I'm glad or relieved or disappointed that they didn't follow up on that more, because that could have gotten really fucking disturbing.
Oh yeah. Jesus Christ.
I mean, it could have gotten literally super rapey. You know, if they really wanted to go there, and I'm obviously, well, if they went there, they never would have gotten this film in theaters.
Well, if this was 15 years earlier, maybe James Gunn and his family would have probably gone that route. But obviously, it's a different time.
Yeah, maybe. But it also kind of like Super would have ended up going straight to DVD.
Yeah.
Very,
you know, as opposed
so,
to making
yeah.
it into your local AMC or Regal Cinemas. So
right,
yeah,
there's no Grant
I thought they pulled the line pretty nicely with that. I thought they made it pretty disturbing without crossing the ick line.
Yeah.
Well, I think because he's 12 and just because he's super powerful, we never get the sense that he's super knowledgeable. I mean, he's a bookworm, so he knows stuff, but it's not necessarily a superpower. So I don't know that he would necessarily know how to deal with a girl in that way, necessarily. So they don't think they had to go there, but they certainly could have just kept playing the stalkery angle, and it still would have been creepy even if it didn't get explicitly sexual. It's just weird to me that they made a big deal out of that in the middle of the story, and
they dropped it afterwards quickly too.
Right, he gets rid of the mom because she's an obstacle, and then he doesn't pursue it. Now, he's a 12-year-old boy.
Well,
they often have a short attention span.
Well, I think he was going to pursue it, but the girl embarrassed him in public by saying he's a pervert.
Right.
Yeah, but he said he wanted to see her again, but he had to get rid of the mom first.
Yeah, but then second time he sees the girl, she embarrasses him.
Well,
but
she sees it. She goes back
to see it. What are you talking about, Abe?
I'm talking about the fact that she sees her again after she breaks her hand.
Right.
No, but what happened was, is he sneaks into her house, and she sees him behind the curtain, or at least she thinks she does. The mother comes in, doesn't find anything. Then she embarrasses him in public, and he breaks her hand. And then, you're right, then he breaks into sneaks into her house again,
bringing her
flowers. Apologizes, and then... Yeah, I see what you're saying now, Abe, because after he apologizes, she says, my mother doesn't want me near you, and he says, all right, I'll take care of that, and you're right, then the mother's removed, and then the story plot lines dropped right there. Yeah, so that's a good point. But
right,
again,
the Chekhov's gun that never went off.
But again, though, at that point, everything was moving quick, right? So
yeah, well, the storyline is much shorter. I mean, it's only like 90 minutes. It's not a long movie.
Right, right. But once the mother is gone, then that's when everything spirals out of control within, like, it's probably only like a 3-day period after he takes out the girl's mother, because then he is called into the principal's office for breaking her hand, and the aunt discovers that he may be a sociopath, and then he takes out Badger, the uncle. And then Roy from the office begins to suspect that...
Stop using names that aren't in this movie!
Sorry. So the father begins to suspect that the kid's dangerous. And then literally, like, the next day after that, that's when the kid goes off, basically. So the last... It's funny. It's like the first hour of the film takes place over months and years. And then the last half hour is like a 3-day period.
Right,
and I think that's why they didn't really go any further with the girl, I guess.
No, plus, I just think it's a weird thing to write that line and not follow up on it.
Yeah, for a minute I thought they were going for like a dark Lois Lane kind of story of Ryan.
Right.
And so unless they're planning on doing a follow up in a sequel, or there is a scene that was deleted, and I wouldn't be shocked if there is a deleted scene.
And what's the line that is said, Mike?
The line about how mom won't be an obstacle anymore, or in the future, or whatever it is.
Which is true, because he kills her.
Right, but then they don't follow up. An obstacle to what? He removes the obstacle and then never takes a shot at the goal.
Oh, right, right. But again, like I said, everything happens within a 70...
The thing is, the whole little extra video could have been cut out, and instead it could have been him just getting back at her. The mother, just for calling him, you know, a freak and stuff.
Right, I guess, yeah. I mean,
he certainly had, I mean, he's got super speed. He had plenty of time to go back and put his moves on her.
Right. No, I see your point. I just am forgiving the film, or being devil's advocate by saying, well, it all...
It's not a major complaint. It's just, I'm just saying it's a little weird choice.
So, let's talk about when he does take out the mom. When there are things in movies that involve eyes, I get a bit squirmy, and I was really, really squirmy.
Oh, during the glass scene. In the eye. That
yeah. Because yeah. He gets a big old piece of glass in his eye, and then they do not cut away when she pulls this big ass piece of glass out of her eye. I'm just sitting there going,
I actually love the little bit there when you actually see her eyes moving back and forth. The glass is moving with it, and she pulls, and you see it split apart. I mean, they really want you to get
this. Icky, 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 oh, don't yeah. like it.
They really want you to see that.
Yeah, so some good eye gore there.
Yeah, it was pretty disturbing. And I forgot that this was a James Gunn film, even though he didn't write it or direct it. I mean, he produced it. This was everything about this film. His fingerprints are on it. If you've seen Slither or Super, mm-hmm. you'll get the idea. I mean, his R-rated films, obviously maybe not Guardians of the Galaxy, but his R-rated films are similar to Sam Raimi R-rated films, where they're over-the-top crazy. versus their PG-13 films. And here it's, yeah, they're showing stuff sticking out of people's eyes and pulling it out and all this other stuff.
And then there's the uncle's death.
Oh, God.
Which,
oh,
which right now, I'd have to go back and look, might be my death of the year.
Yeah.
That might be my death of the year.
Totally.
You mean Badger?
Yeah.
But Badger... But his death, how can that be his death though? Because it's not his death, was it? Wasn't he? How did he die?
He died.
No,
slowly, but he died.
It was totally jaw dropping.
But he didn't. He wasn't dead, even with the jar all fucked up.
Yeah, he did.
Killed him.
They said he died.
No. Yes. Not the stand. He survived the accident with his jaw crushed. So how did he die after that? I forget.
He died.
Died because of that. It wasn't a quick death, but it was a death.
Yeah.
He died from the impact and the physical trauma and like was alive for a few seconds afterwards, and then, you know, he wanted to look good, so he put his jaw back, but...
I thought...
And then he died.
Can I speak? Can I ask the question?
No, you already did.
No. I thought after... He survived the accident and his jaw was all fucked up. The kid, the evil kid, comes back and then kills him, doesn't he?
No.
He doesn't just let him...
He just takes some blood on his finger and looks at it.
Yeah, okay. He marked the scene and then flew away.
Yeah.
Okay. No, thank you. Okay. Gotcha. I forgot. Even though I saw the film just a week, within the past week, I forgot that.
Yes, he was bleeding out.
He dipped his finger in a broken jaw to get some paint, and then made his little symbol on the road.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought it was kind of really clever that what the symbol is basically two bees together.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. That was a neat little detail.
Right, because it's his initials.
Mm-hmm.
Breyer is his last name. I forget the first name.
Yeah,
okay. Brandon.
That's right. Yeah. Well, speaking of death, the sheriff's death was very surprising that it happened that quick.
that was sudden.
Yeah.
Wow, that escalated quickly.
Well, because when he shows up, the sheriff shows up with the deputy. You figure the deputy's the red shirt, you know, and they kind of switch it around a little bit, which I thought was pretty cool. technically, they were both red shirts, but you figured the sheriff was going to be the one doing the standoff, but it wasn't.
Right. Well, and I want to talk about the one thing in the movie that really bugged me. I got to set it up first though, which is that there's a scene where they're on a farm. There's a barn, and he's not supposed to play in the barn. But he's being drawn to his spaceship that brought him here. So at one point he gets the secret doors open to where it's stored, and jumps down there and, cuts himself on the spaceship. So I'm thinking to myself when this happens, hey, cause the father had mentioned that he's never been cut or hurt. And I was thinking to myself, hey, that's a really nice, kind of subtle way to introduce the whole kryptonite aspect, right?
Yeah.
The spaceship from where he's from, that metal can hurt him. So that's cool. But then later in the movie, during that scene where you're talking about when the sheriff shows up, and he just goes berserk and destroys the house, and the mom's trying to get away. She cuts her hand, and okay, fine. If they want to do that, if they want to have her cut her hand and look at her hand and then run out to the barn when she remembers what happened to his hand, cool. That's fine. But I swear to God, they might have even gone back and overdubbed it. Because there was this horrible line where she looks at her hand that she just goes and goes, oh, that's right. The spaceship cut him to herself while she's trying to be not detected by the psychopathic super killer. I'm just like, oh my God, could you treat your audience like they're any dumber? I that moment really, really bothered me.
Yeah, there's a lot of moments like that in many films where if you pay attention, there's that overdubbed line that you maybe don't realize it's overdubbed, but you notice it's said while the person's back is to the camera, or...
Tool shop.
And it's just let me explain, because we think you didn't pick up the connection earlier, or you don't think that she's going to make that connection by looking at that wound.
Yeah.
We've got to explain it to the slower members of our audience.
Yeah. It's basically a case of, you know, not, it's, you know, telling versus showing. You know, we, the film, there's enough, it's, the film's not that long. I mean, as I said, the detail of the cut should be able, it should be fresh enough in the end. Just to her going back to look at her hand and then go back and get her piece should be enough to say exactly what she intends on doing.
Yeah, but even if they'd like done like a very quick flashback to that in a barn, that even would have been better to me than her delivering that line out.
Oh yeah, it was awkward. It was very awkward. You know, it's kind of like that thing where and where people talk about certain past events that you've been through with each other, even though they had no reason to talk about them again, and it's only for the audience. It's really, it's just, it's silly. It's obnoxious.
Right, right. No, it's true.
So that was the only thing in this film that really, really bugged me.
You know what bothered me, and is more of me overthinking than it's being stupid, is when the aunt is all alone at her house, and the backyard lights turn on, and then the computer surveillance speaks and says movement in backyard.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, my God, that must be as annoying as fucking hell, because where I live, I get deer, bear,
right.
raccoons, right. foxes. Right. It's yeah. like, that thing's going to go off every
yeah,
10 seconds.
Yeah, I was totally in the back. Movement, totally thought the same thing.
Movement in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who have, like, the lights, you know, like, you walk up the driveway, or anyone goes by the house, the lights come on. That's not unusual.
Right.
But the intruder alert, intruder alert.
And
that
it's just a freaking deer, in the
and there's or, yeah, there's a bunny hopping through your yard at 4 a.m, and you know you got to get
well. Well, it's like they always say. Why don't they just put up motion detectors on the border to see if people are running over the border? And it's like, dude, you got moose walking over the border every fucking day where I live. Yeah,
so I don't think they have that on the Mexico border.
No, but
Canadian border they.
Right, yeah. So my point, where I live, moose and deer are just walking over the border left and right, so it wouldn't work. So, but either way, yeah, so I felt that was a little bizarre. And that was the only thing that really...
I understand why they did it, though.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. It was to make it more suspenseful and whatnot. Yeah, I thought she was a goner, too, but she made it.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
Yeah, it was weird. I thought he was going to like finish her off at some point. I thought, I mean, he's fast enough to like put a bunch of symbols all over the windows of the diner, but she's not quick enough to just quickly kill one woman.
Well, I don't know if he wanted to. Is basically what it occurred to. It was more of a threat.
Right.
But the thing that was weird about that whole scene was when Badger or whatever the uncle's name is that comes home, he's inside the house. He's, you know, brushing his teeth or whatever, and then the kid sneaks up behind him, and he flips out, and it was weird because we don't see the aunt again, and she's in the house. So
yeah, it was a little weird.
Yeah, I mean,
it's almost like they cut out a scene or something.
Well,
or,
you know,
that's possible.
I mean that character was completely cut out after the uncle's death too.
No, that's not true. She was at the hospital.
Yeah, I'm saying after the uncle is killed, because she's at the hospital, she's gone afterwards.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, so that was odd. What about Roy from the
Well, office? The funny thing is he's afraid about them telling his mom, right? He's just, I've got all the power in the world. Don't tell my mommy.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, that's the thing. And it makes sense because, I mean, at that
point, does.
He doesn't want to. I mean, he's still. If his parents weren't going to turn him in, I think he would have lived happily ever after with them. It's just that, obviously, they're moral people and he's becoming a psychopath. So.
Yeah, I don't know if. I don't know if the dad's plan was really the best one, though.
That was such a dumb move.
Well, I am going out on a limb that they live in a universe where there was no Superman.
All right, fine.
But yeah,
would have been fine with me had he not previously made the comment that the kid had never been hurt.
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, I'm willing to. My bigger issue, I guess, is that. I mean, he does know he's going to get caught, right?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, what's he going to do? Take the kid out? Say if it did work. He takes the kid out, he shoots him in the woods, then what? Does he, like, I totally took care of it, Sheriff. It's all good. Come over for pancakes later.
Hunting accident.
Yeah, yes. He looked like a moose to me.
or I mean, even if he's willing to take the hit for the fate of the world, I mean, if that's, you know, I could understand that. I just wasn't clear what his long-term plan was. And let's be honest, he's a person, and many people do things without thinking about the long-term consequences. But yeah, don't shoot Clark Kent in the back of the head.
It just goes tink. I was like, oh, he's so fucked.
Well, I could understand why he still thought the bullet would have worked, because I mean, when you have a 30-06 at point blank range, you figure the kid's going to die. But the problem I would agree with is the other point, which is, yeah, what's his long term plan to cover this up? You know, unless
a nice made a good job point, though,
which is a hunting accident or something.
After he takes the shot, I thought they did a nice job of leaving that beat there before he reacts, of having that moment of the dad being like, oh, shit, and the kid being like, hey, you just fucking shot me. and I really think that's the point of no return as far as the boy's character goes. It's like, well, if my own dad's trying to kill me, then fuck it. Let's go.
You know, and, you know, once Kyle made is his head-exploding exit, you know, afterwards I felt that the rest of the movie kind of went through the motions. You know, this is one thing I always have problem with overpowered villains, is that usually there's no real solution at all, so you're just kind of watching things play out. And I said, lead up to the whole psychotic breakdown was much more engaging than the aftermath.
Well, one thing you forgot, though, Abe, is that there was still a chance, especially after we saw that obviously silly, or not silly, but overplayed scene where she cuts her hand and didn't remember.
Yeah, but do you honestly think that James Gunn or his two was brothers? Really?
Brother and first cousin.
First cousin. You obviously think the guns were going to have the cliche of hugging your loved one, stabbing them. What kind of shitty exit for a villain is that?
Well, that's a fair point, but
that's so overused that it would be expected. I know they would have expected people to actually buy that it was going to be it, but there's no way they were going to do that.
Well, they had a couple of things going. There was that one. The first one was the Rosemary's Baby one, where they were making it appear that she was going to go along at the end and turn and become, you know, like in Rosemary's Baby, spoiler alert for a 50-year-old film. She, even though she's fighting basically the whole devil cult, the whole film, at the very end, when she sees the baby, even though the baby is basically Satan's son with black eyes, she becomes a mother and decides to take care of it, and that's how it ends. So, the person fighting against the bad joins the bad at the end, and it was kind of going that way at first, right? And then when she finds out her husband gets killed, that's when she finally – that story, the Rosemary baby part, disappears, and it goes into the second one, which is it's a showdown, and are they going to have the boy die in her arm, right?
As I said, that's so expected. That is such a – I think they actually killed off the last antagonist in Game of Thrones that way.
That's correct. They did.
So, that was pretty a shitty way too to end the villain too. I mean, god damn. You know, honestly, I knew it was not going to happen, especially how long the windup was.
No, and that's fair. Let me ask you, Eric and Mike, did you guys, what were you expecting when she had the shiv? Do you think she was going to succeed or not at that point? Or were you not sure?
Yes. I could have seen it go either way. James Gunn would have gone the dark way. I don't know his brother, cousin, what way that writing duo would go. I don't know which way, you know, the studio would insist after like a test screening, So I really didn't know which way it was going to go.
It is the R. It's the R-rated James Gunn, so it's a little different than the PG.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying, but I could just as easily have seen it go the opposite way. I'm happy it kind of went the way that it did. Because you know, this is you know, getting back to my comic book geekiness. You know, you often get that. You know, they even made a movie about it, Batman versus Superman. It's like, nope, Batman would never stand a chance. I don't care how much Batman is. It's just not going to happen.
So, you know. to get off the comic book geekiness there about Batman Superman, because no one
cares. Which you just spent more time on because I was done.
Yeah, so that's a fair point, Mike. I wasn't sure either. I thought it was going to go either way, too. I wasn't sure. I do like how they disposed of the mother, though. The way it was pretty horrific. The only thing I'm shocked that James Gunn and crew didn't do was to actually show the body splatter on the ground. But, yeah. And not only did she die, but she died pretty quick. In other words, the father you kind of gathered was going to be the red shirt because he was second billed, even though he was basically a co-star. But when he gets taken out with an hour and 10 minutes into the film, or an hour and 15 minutes, whatever, I was surprised that Banks's character went right after, because a lot of times, like, you know, that movie Orphan or whatever, when they take out the father, they still have a 20 minutes or 30 minutes where the mother is fighting off without the father and all that. So I thought they were going to go that. So I'm glad they didn't do that either, where they had that cliche, which is one of the worst, where they knock off one parent and then the other parent, you know, just goes off and whatnot. So, Eric, what was your opinion? Were you surprised that she didn't get to kill the kid with the shiv, or were you expecting it to go the way it was? Which were you expecting?
I was mildly surprised. When he grabbed her hand, I was like, oh, all right.
Yeah. Okay, let me ask you, was anyone sad that she was caught?
Not really.
I wouldn't say sad.
I mean, I really thought she was a fucking fool most of the movie. So, I mean, this was all, you know, expected.
You know what? When the last 15 to 20 minutes prior to this happened, I was already disliking her because she was already taking the son's side over the father's side. And I thought they were going to go the Rosemary Baby way anyway. So I was like, didn't really like her character at that point.
Because you don't think mothers should protect their children?
Not when there's so much evidence that proves that he most likely killed numerous people.
I don't know
that
he had
all the as well as all the chickens and all that. And you know,
there was no proof.
There was enough that I wouldn't have defended him. I could see her saying, "Well, let's go talk to a counselor or we have to do something." But she wasn't. She was like, "Nope, it's not true."
He was seeing a counselor.
Yeah, his aunt. That worked out well.
Yeah, that went so fucking well.
Good job.
But my point, Eric, and Mike and whoever said it, isn't a mother protecting their child. It was a mother that would see signs just as the father and say, I'm going to protect my child.
Yeah, it happens in real life, Phil, with kids that aren't superpowered.
Yeah,
there are mothers of criminals who can't see it.
Well, that makes them fools after.
Even when they see it, they still don't stop loving their child.
And that's, you know, that's a problem. It is, because it you know, it just really shows that how stupid most of them are. They can't just accept the very fact that some things are just don't turn out.
I think stupid's the wrong word, though. I'm having an issue with the use of that word.
Well, or maybe they're just moms who love their children.
But again, the father.
Blinded? I'll go with blinded.
The father loved his son as probably as much as the mother loved the son, but the father was always a realist because he knew where the kid came from. He knew that most likely the kid killed all the animals. He knew that something is fishy about the uncle's death.
He was much more practical. but I don't think that makes her stupid. I don't see that about her child.
Yeah, I didn't say stupid, but I would say that she was ignorant.
She let things go on way too fucking long when they should have done something sooner.
With a couple of days.
Your point of view is outside the situation and not being a mother, yes.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, there's two things. Both of you have points. I think Abe is using the wrong semantics, but I think we all understand what he's trying to get at.
No, I understand the point he's making.
The terminology is wrong.
I don't think qualifying a woman as stupid for not wanting to acknowledge her son's bad behavior is... I just don't like using that word. That's all.
Right, and let's be honest. It's not acknowledging bad behavior, right? It's not like he was shoplifting bubblegum.
Oh, okay, fair enough. It's super bad behavior.
We're
talking about murdering animals and humans, including a relative.
Right, but that makes it harder to accept.
Breaking a girl's arm at school.
But that makes it harder to accept.
Dude, have you watched movie about Ted Bundy? His girlfriend was in complete denial about him the whole time.
I agree with all these things. However, I'm just saying that we had a counterpoint, which was the father.
Right.
And so if the father wasn't a counterpoint, I would agree 100%, because then it's just one person or two people saying, no, it's not our kid, it's not our kid. But when you have the counterpoint, you would think there would have been something that would make the mother go, you know, we love our kids, so let's try to see what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Abe is trying to get at. But Mike had a good point, too, which is we're only talking 3 days at this point, because the rest of this is when the movie...
There's a certain point where you have to say the kid's lost, especially when they fucking kill somebody.
I would agree.
At a certain point, a person is... They, unfortunately, are just that. They are a killer. They are a criminal. This is, as you were saying, this is not... shoplifting or something like that. This is crossing the threshold behavior.
Well, and she gets there eventually.
Way too late.
But it's too late. Yeah.
That's just not something people are generally built to jump to with somebody. Look, we've known that kid for about 45 minutes. And we went in there knowing he was going to be a psychopath. You know, in that reality, she has raised that child. She's seen this wonderful, sweet little boy. She's not ready to accept that he's a psychopathic killer. There hasn't been enough evidence there, I think, to justify her making that leap, you know, especially when you throw in the emotion that's involved. So take issue with that.
And when the cop comes to the door with the evidence that actually does connect the dots for her, she gets on board, but it's too late.
Also, I think another problem with her behavior is when they talk about how the uncle has died and the kid basically doesn't give a rat's ass. He's like a total sociopath.
Right.
And then the aunt says he was there last night and all these other things start popping up. And the husband, you know, two to two together, and he was like, okay, there's something wrong here. Never mind the animals, and never mind the missing girl's mother, never mind the girl's arm. Which they do know 100%. That's guaranteed. You know, that was everybody saw that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it an accident?
The aunt didn't. The mother that at least should have. I could see Abe's point. The mother should have, you know, but she was in denial. It really what it comes down to is she was in denial. I don't think she was being mean or evil by being.
She didn't want to think that about her son.
Exactly. That's right. Because she.
It's not like one of us is being accused of being a serial killer.
Yeah.
But she's also there's like two things going on. Not only is it her son, though adopted, it's also what she believed was a gift from God. Right. It was.
She might say that. Yeah.
You know, so she couldn't believe that this gift, this miracle. Actually is now turning out to be the downfall of not only
mankind,
her husband, but herself and everybody else possibly. Yeah, exactly.
I think the way it's presented in the movie, because of the timeline differential that Mike was just alluding to, it looks worse than it would be if if it were an actual passage of time, because I think it's going to take more than 3 days to turn you against your son.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I don't even think the father was turning against the son. I think he turned against the son. Well, yeah, because what was
after
the
incident in the kitchen?
Yeah, I think that was the moment that he decided.
Even then, that was hard for him too, because he was looking at pictures before he decided to go on that so-called trip.
Mm-hmm. Right. He was
trying to come to terms with the decision he was going to have to make.
Also, you got to remember too that unlike the mother, the father saw the whole incident with the animals, because he saw his son there and all that, and then, you know, a half hour later they're all dead. Well, the mother wasn't there, and then he was also with the uncle playing pool and knows the uncle wasn't drunk driving, even though the mother was saying, well, maybe
actually he totally was drunk driving,
but
he's pretty buzzed.
You know what I'm talking about though, because
yeah, I just think you're wrong.
All right, well, I guess, yeah, I mean, that makes it, well, all right, well, all right, then that makes it another fair point. The uncle was there, and he saw the guy and says, all right, he may be over the limit, but he wasn't stumbling drunk, while the mother had a good point, too, which is, well, he was probably drunk.
Yeah. You know,
So
the fact that he died in a car crash, I'm sure once they poked around a little bit, they'd be like, hey, there's no way that damage could have been caused by normal forward motion. But they, you know, they haven't investigated yet.
Right, right. Again, we're talking within the next day, everybody's dead anyway. So,
right.
Yeah, but that whole incident in the kitchen when the son flips out and throws the father.
Right, that was well done. I like that.
Yeah, it was. That was a really, and it was a nice bit of force. It wasn't overdone. It was a nice little bit of a struggle in a sense there, because everyone was a moment of pause and just realized, almost literally, as broken as that glass was, how shattered the family was.
Mm-hmm.
And
the look on a dad's face, I liked how he didn't oversell it, but at the same time, you could think, holy shit, my 12-year-old just threw me across the room.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know the actor.
Shut up.
What are you talking about? Let me rephrase. Or repeat. For those
who repeat is more like it.
Could I just say my point? For those who don't know the actor, this guy's a pretty big guy. Right? So when he gets thrown across the room by a 12-year-old, I mean, we're not talking about, just a normal 5'10", 180-pounder. We're talking about a guy that could be a bouncer at a bar.
Right. It's not like he threw Michael from The Office across the room.
right. Yeah, exactly. If you want to do the Office.
Oh, my goodness.
Analogy. That's exactly right. We're not throwing Steve Carroll. We're throwing Denham across the room. And this guy's huge.
But you know,
he's 6'4". Yeah.
But even the throw wasn't oversold either. It was enough force to really kind of be shocking, but it wasn't like what
the dude, he took the door off the hinges.
Yeah, what I'm saying is it wasn't to the degree that the deputy got.
Well, the deputy didn't get thrown. That was super speed flying. And
you know what I'm trying to say? It was forced to be shocking, but it wasn't overdone to the point where he's going through walls.
Right, but it's enough that you know the kid has superpowers.
Exactly. As you said, the scene was subtle enough to be shocking, but it wasn't overplayed.
Right. And the mother saw it too, but she has a different reaction than the father. The father's reaction is, okay, I got to do something even without the mother's approval, while the mother's still in denial. Let's see. All right, now let's talk about this space thing in the spacecraft thing. And let's talk about the asteroid too. I'm surprised how they did it. They just like show this preamble scene and then they fast forward 7 years,
mm-hmm.
rather than the whole. Unlike the movie Superman, the Christopher Reeve film. They don't show them going to the hole, except in like a dream later in the film, right?
Yeah, flashback or whatever.
Yeah,
that dream sequence is a little bit cheesy.
I would have liked them to have gone out to the asteroid or whatever it was, the spaceship.
I think
instead of the dream later.
I think I preferred them. Unfortunately, this is the part where I was trying to get Pam's, my wife's, closed captioning device fixed. I think, again, we've seen the story. I don't think they needed to go there. So I kind of prefer that they didn't. I didn't see the need to show it again later. So I'll agree with Abe that I think maybe the that was a little cheesy, was doing the dream sequence later.
And the spaceship, it's like, I just had a similar thought when I saw the spaceship as I did when I recently rewatched Alien, which is an Alien. They're in the room with Mother, and this whole room has all these lights all over the goddamn room. And my thought is, why? Why do you need all these lights flashing in the computer room? What's the purpose?
Yeah.
Not like anybody's looking at them. So I had the same thought with the shot of the spaceship in this movie. It's got all these lights on the outside, and I'm like, why?
I guess it's the rule of cool, really. I did like the computer voice, though. I love that kind of deep, kind of horror droning voice.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was actually kind of cool, but I do agree.
Decidedly evil.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, and I just kind of like how it was slowly, almost like it was reprogramming him through these kind of seizures and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really love, as I said, part of the buildup that was really satisfying was seeing the transformation and also just the influence. Kind of as, I think it was, someone mentioned how he said he wanted to do good. So it leads into the question how much of it was choice and how much it was completely influenced by whatever force sent him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool, and I really liked that. So I wish I wouldn't be so hard on the Mother character if there was more of that clear sense of struggle in Brandon.
Go ahead, finish your point.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is, you know, the sense here that there's only like the kind of little bit there at the end, and there was a little more of that here and there. I felt the struggle would have been more believable than so kind of last minute.
Now, Mike, you're the one that felt that the voice and all that, even if it was a cool concept, kind of takes away the choice and all that. Do you think after the kid becomes the psychopath, do you think he becomes the psychopath because the alien voice told him to finally become the psychopath, or do you think it was him becoming, oh, now I'm a superpower and the alien voice really didn't even matter and I'm just going to be evil because I have all these powers because I'm a stupid 12-year-old kid that's, you know, say fuck you if you bother me, or do you think it's a combination of both?
I think that the way they set it up, they're not completely clear. But I think they put too much emphasis into the insect thing and the hive mind and him repeating what the voice told him. You know, my sense, and I might be wrong about this, is like where, you know, Superman was sent from the dying planet, as like the last lifeline of that world. Here I get the sense this is probably like how they end up conquering worlds, like they send these ships out. That was my thought, and that's completely conjecture on my part. But yeah, I think I get the sense it was like a switch was flipped, you know, and that's what made him bad. And that's why I didn't necessarily like it as much as if it had been a free will corrupted by power. Because they have the droning voice telling him, take the world, take the world, take the world. I never got the sense it was, hey, just a thought. Have you considered taking the world? You know, I got the sense it was a command, that he was being triggered to obey.
Right, right. So if he had just been alien that just randomly landed there, and he just became bad because of various things, rather than someone just flipping a switch, that would have been more interesting, in your opinion.
Well, I think if he was a quote-unquote person, maybe not a human person, but a person, a being who, you know, humanoid enough. Like I said, I think if you handed an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old all that power, you know, at the time they're testing their powers, they're testing what they can get away with, they're testing all their limits, and he finds out he has none, I could see that being pretty freaking scary.
It becomes intoxicating to them.
I mean, it's bad enough if you did it to my grandma, you know, then, you know, you still have the risk that it's going to break bad. But you do right. it, you know, that it's possibly at that adolescence era, you know, is possibly the worst time to give a young boy superpowers.
Right, right. That's a fair point. It's human nature, in a sense, when power corrupts, absolutely. I remember I used to work with this Indian guy back in my prior job, and he was asking me all about the founding fathers and all that of the United States and whatnot. And I know nowadays they're getting rewritten as bad people because it's politically correct to say that. But at the time, and I still agree, I mentioned that, well, you know, these guys all created the country with the Constitution, all this other stuff, and they offered the presidency for permanence, basically making George Washington like a king almost if he wanted it. And instead, George Washington and all the founding fathers, who are all powerful, took that power and gave it back to the people.
And look what we did with it.
And well, now 250 years later, but gave it back to the people. And I said that's a very rare thing in humanity and in the world in general. And so, you know, you have people like for example, you know, Kim Jong Un, who becomes the leader after his father dies, and he could do anything he wants, and what happens is he becomes his father. And so I you're absolutely right, Mike. I think that someone that gets all that power, the chance or likelihood they're going to be Superman rather than at least if they're human, because the humans are apt to be to turn to the dark side pretty,
you know,
quickly. We're not goats.
I've heard that people suck.
Yeah, so
that's the truth.
Well, it's, you know, not to go back to a different podcast that maybe some of us have been on before, but it's sort of like Joffrey in Game of Thrones, right? You take an immature, spoiled brat
right.
and make him king, and oh, look, it goes badly.
Right. Yeah, not everybody's going to be Tommen, right?
Right.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, there's so many conditions that involved in how one with power treats it. You know, with Brandon here, he just realizes his power. And, you know, even if we were trying to take out the alien influence, he already is learning that his limits allow him to get away with almost anything. He doesn't learn any kind of responsibility of that power. Joffrey, for example, because I remember watching the first couple of seasons, you know, he was already an unstable little bastard, but he was getting slapped around even by his uncle and stuff like that, and he was still subservient until he finally got power, and then he went crazy with it. It was intoxicating to him.
Right. He was. You're absolutely right. That's a good point, Abe, because Joffrey was already apt to be a dirtbag if he got that power, unlike, say, you know, Jon Snow, if he got that power. And so in this case here, this kid was generally a good kid. So Mike has an excellent point, which is had he gotten the power without being influenced, there was a chance that he could have just been, you know, a Superman, or he could have just been a Superman, but still, you know, use X-ray vision to see the girls,
well,
in, you know, naked. But he probably wouldn't have been the bad Thanos.
Well, he has Thanos was the hero. Let's also remember I think it was the first scene we see him in with the classroom scene, yeah. Right? We see him being bullied.
Yeah.
Well, not bullied, but made fun of.
Fun of.
Right.
Right. Right, because he knows the thing about the difference between a wasp and a bee, and, you know, the kid calls him a maggot or something like that. So clearly, the kid's been picked on. So you have there building blocks for him wanting to lash out at somebody. Right.
Right.
What would he do? All right. So here you get the nerdy kid who finally has the power to fight back.
Right.
would he do that? And would he? And what happens? Yeah, maybe he gets shocked, right? He punches the kid, and his fist goes through the back of the kid's head, and he'd be horrified at first, but then he doesn't get caught, or it feels good that his bully has shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Well, you know, we get that moment where he puts his hand in the lawnmower blade, and, you know, beforehand he throws it, and he's shocked, but when he realizes he can't even be hurt, that gives him a sense of being untouchable. As a kid, we grow up feeling more vulnerable to the world around us. We feel special, but we also feel very vulnerable. And in this case here, he realizes he can't be hurt. And he can do things beyond things that gives him that sense of, that makes him stand above everything around him.
And I will say that was, thanks for bringing that up. That was the other thing that I was a little, it was that this is clearly a nitpick. It's like, did Dad not wonder why the lawn wasn't mowed? I mean, there was never a, I mean, he broke the lawnmower and threw it, and we never found out, like, you know, question about the lawnmower was never redressed. It's a minor thing. They didn't have to do it because they easily could have been dismissed as I ran over a rock.
He just right. grabbed a scythe and went with super speed, so the lawn was mowed.
Yeah, that would work.
Now, but you're right, Mike. I mean, they skipped the whole scene because they just fast forward to a restaurant scene or something like that. But the birthday scene, they fast forward to the next scene, goes right to the birthday scene. But the thing is you're right. I mean, I would have liked a nitpick to make the scene work a little better. They could have had him saying, "Oh yeah, Dad, I ran over a rock."
Wait a minute. I just remember something now too. If he never could have been hurt, it was the alien metal was the only thing that could cut him. If he ever went to the doctors as a child for a shot, he couldn't get one.
Well, yeah, that's something else. There is no way when Superman was written, it was 1937, 1938, something like that. Paperwork was really shitty back then. Now, the amount of red tape and regulations, you couldn't just show up with, "Hey, look, we found a child. We're taking him in." You know, there would have to be vaccination records. There's all sorts of shit that would have to happen. But now you're losing the story, right? I'm willing for them to say.
What do you mean to take them in, Mike? What does that mean?
Well, they can't just come. You can't just say, "Hey, look, I found a baby in the woods."
Yeah. If you show up with a kid in town, people are going to ask questions.
They're going to go, "Weren't you not pregnant yesterday?"
Well, yeah, but they could just say that it was my uncle's kid or something. I mean, we in that part of Kansas.
Yeah, but schools
have a lot of illegal immigration because of the workers, you know, the farming and all that. So people just appear out of nowhere all the time out there.
I don't know. It's a little unusual. There would, you know, I'm just saying it's just a little unusual. But that's not the thing. This is not trying to be a story about immigration problems or how we need you need to be vaccinated to get your child in school. We don't need. That's not what the story is about.
Because he can't get vaccinated because of the needle.
Because of the needles, right? He can't get his medical checkup. There's all sorts of little things that, you know, just finding a kid in the middle of the woods and saying, "He's going to be mine," would never happen. But you want to be able to... Do we really want to watch 30 minutes of them trying to explain how all this happened?
Superman, the paperwork.
Right, we don't. We just, we get it. We know the story. We're willing to accept it to get to Superman killing people.
Right. Well, you know what, though? A lot of, to be honest, that is true. Some of that is nitpicking, and I'll say why. Because, for example, the actor Jack Nicholson, his mother had him out of wedlock, and so he was brought up by his grandmother, and he thought his mother was his sister. So,
yeah, but that was in the 40s and 50s.
Right, but... Well, that's true. It's a little different today. But my point is that even if they had the records correct and they gave it to the school, it's in the school and then it goes into a file cabinet or nowadays into a folder on a computer and no one ever looks at it again. And so then the grandmother in Jack Nicholson's case could go around saying, "This is my son," and he's going to say, "Yeah, that's my mom." And that's just how it's going to be. And everybody's just going to believe it forever and ever. You see what I'm saying? So it's just a one-time formality, and then it passes.
Are we actually having this conversation?
This
is a weird deviation.
I don't agree.
We've been talking about this movie for longer than the runtime. So,
well, yeah. but Mike and Abe did have good points about what happens to a superhero that can't have needles, and how what happens to when you find the kid, and how do you explain it, and all that. So, you're right. It's not directly related to the plot of the movie, but they are interesting topics, Mike and Abe. So I'll give you that. We can start wrapping it up. And before we do, any other final scenes or anything that we've missed?
Love the last bit of scene with Michael Rooker as the conspiracy theorist and teasing about the evil Aquaman and the crazy Wonder Woman running around.
And was that a Flash that was in the corner? I didn't get a good look at that. There was like six, right?
Yeah, there was a one in a red costume that looked like from another movie, I think.
Right, and of course, Michael Rooker has been in many movies by James Gunn, so it makes sense that he would be in the film.
Oh, yeah, it was the Crimson Bolt from something called Super.
Right.
And he played
Mary Poppins in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and then he was also in Slither. He played the monster. No,
I was just answering Mike's thing about who the one in the corner was. It was in the there was like six characters mentioned in the conspiracy theories, but there was one from another movie called Super, Crimson Bolt, 2010 superhero.
Okay.
Right, James Gunn.
And Super was by James Gunn. That's exactly right.
Yeah, that movie was fucking weird.
What a thing with Nathan Fillion as God's chosen superhero and coming to with tentacle porn or something like that.
No, you're talking about Slither. I was talking about Super.
That's what I'm talking about. That was in that film, wasn't it? Where he's like where he plays like the character. Rainn Wilson is watching TV, and Nathan Fillion isn't he on TV as like the
Jesus
character or something like that?
It's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. That was a great movie. Rainn Wilson's the best from The Office. Dwight from The Office. There you go.
Next week for our Office podcast with Phil Perrin.
Anything with James Gunn has someone to do with The Office. So I stayed through the credits. There was no end credit scene. I was surprised because in a superhero film, I thought they would do that. You know,
what's that? Here's something interesting here. Remember how we were talking about Caitlin, the girl?
Yeah, the girl.
Yeah.
Well, it says there's an alternate ending to the film featured Emmy Hunter's Caitlin, ending with her in a lab fastening a robot arm on her broken arm and her being pissed off.
Oh, so they're going to make her become a superhero with a side?
Well, that was an alternate
arm or something.
Yeah, an alternate ending that was going there, but I guess it was cut out. That's probably why she kind of just vanished.
Okay, makes sense. That's interesting. Let's see, Eric, would you buy the Blu-ray if it had all the stuff on it?
I'd look at what was on there and consider it.
Right.
If there's a comment, like usually if there's a commentary, I'm in.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the main thing. Is if they have a commentary, it's definitely worth usually buying. Everything else is good too, but the commentary is the key, I think. At least for me. All right. Any other scenes anybody want to bring up? Anything? Like I said, there was no end credit scene, which was kind of a bummer.
No, I really would like to see the Evil Justice League story. And I'm fine if we don't get it, but I'm just a glutton for these things. So,
yeah, the Evil Justice. There's a video game at the local area near where I live, and my kids always watch it when we go to that building. But I don't even know what they are. So it's like an alternate
Injustice?
Yeah, Injustice League or something.
Right. It's a different the video game is an alternate timeline.
Is it the same characters that are just evil, or is it an alternate dimension?
It's an alternate dimension where Superman goes bad because, if I remember correctly, something terrible happens to Lois Lane and he snaps.
Yeah, and he becomes ruthless, and it gets into a kind of a civil war between him and Batman and different factions.
Okay. It's their excuse of doing a fighting game with the DC superheroes, so you could explain why they're all beating the crap out of each other like it's a Mortal Kombat game.
Pretty much. Gotcha. Yep.
Okay, so it wasn't from a comic book. It was originally from the video game.
It was from the video game that proved really popular and since been adapted into several comic book series.
Yeah, because it's really popular, and it's you win a card. You get make collector cards. They pump them out. If you get so many points, you get a card, a random card, and there's like 60 of them or something. And so my kids like them because you can get Wonder Woman or Batman's Flash or whatever. Okay, interesting. I thought it was a TV show or a comic book or something. So it is directly from the video game. How about that? All right. Any other final thoughts? Anyone? Eric?
Huh? What?
That's okay. Eric's just being people.
Eric just doesn't like talking about superheroes. All right, so...
final thoughts, then?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, let's just do our final thoughts. Well, before we do final thoughts, Abe, you were watching that that show on National Geographic.
Yeah, The Hot Zone?
Yeah.
It was actually pretty good overall. It's a little more dramatized. There's some... I'm also reading the novel as well. So there's some things they take liberties with in certain in characters, in certain events that have happened to kind of make more dramatic. But it's well acted, it's well shot, it's an interesting kind of a retelling of this event that transpired. But I definitely recommend the novel that tells about these certain outbreaks and what had transpired, because that is actually much more terrifying that could be put to. You know, to TV without giving it an R rating on maybe like AMC or something like that.
Does it even really? I remember the book, this is the Richard Preston book, Crisis in the Hot Zone.
Yeah.
I mean, is it even technically a novel?
Yeah. Well, it's always called a novel, but you know, it might as well be like a nonfiction.
Right. It feels more like nonfiction, and it's some of it's narrative, but a lot of it's also technical and
it's a mix of both. It's a mix.
Yeah,
of
it's a weird thing. It's certainly
it is very engaging though. And as I said, what's told in this is far more unsettling than anything you can really put to TV. Because for more my issues that they kind of only skim over what really makes this virus a real nightmare.
It just liquefies your internal organs.
It liquefies your organs. It makes you shit out your intestines too, and stuff like that. It's
you
pretty.
You can buy more at the corner market. It's not.
Yeah, I'm sure your black market can sell you new organs and stuff up there. But no, The Hot Zone's still pretty good. But unfortunately, it's a limited series. I think you probably get it on National Geographic streaming for the time being. Mm-hmm. But it's only doing like a.
So I think it's owned by Disney again.
Probably.
Everything's owned by Disney.
They are doing a marathon of all six parts on Saturday.
Oh, cool.
So you can still catch it then. And it also comes with, at the tail end of it, a documentary about the actual event and certain outbreaks around the world.
Okay, so, but we DVR'd it, so we're going to watch it that way. And basically, the way me and Eric like watching things, which is Eric
all at once,
exactly. Binge it.
No. He said all at once. So now I want him setting up six TVs, having all the episodes playing at one time.
Time became.
Ooh, Mike's being funny, Eric.
No, he's really not.
Yeah, I guess not. Right. It was original idea though, Mike. That was well played, even if it wasn't hilarious.
Have to entertain myself.
There you go. Yeah, it's only six episodes. One, I know it's on demand and stuff like that too. But you're right, National Geographic, TV. App will probably have it there, and you said, Mike, that National Geographic is now owned by Disney. Is that true?
I think it is. I think that got picked up with Fox.
That's disgusting.
In the Fox deal,
they're going to break all these.
Disney's just going to control us all. We're only forced to wear Mickey Mouse mind control hats one day.
There you go. All right, so that's good. I know Mike's been binging some of the Godzilla's. I have too, but we won't worry about them. We'll talk about them next week.
I have a warning.
What?
Warning.
I took one for the team. I watched a movie called Welcome to Mercy. avoid it.
Is it
that's
a horror film?
That's a heavy, and they do a pretty good job of tricking you. They got some decent cover art. And Dan made me watch the trailer. And this is why I don't trust trailer, because the trailer actually looks at, makes it look like a good movie, and it is not. It is yeah. not good. It is the opposite of good. Not quite as bad as Braid, but it's pretty bad. So
no, Braid was awesome.
Avoid Welcome to Mercy.
Is it a rental?
I found it on iTunes, yeah.
Okay. It's a horror or thriller or something like that?
Theoretically, it's a horror movie.
Gotcha. All right, so Welcome to Mercy, Avoid.
Avoid.
All right. I was going to say, to humor myself, because it's not really funny, but it would be like Mike humoring myself. I was going to say, instead of warning, something in the backyard, warning.
Warning. Bad movie. Don't watch it. Warning.
And how did you watch this thing?
It was a rental.
Okay. So I've been watching, which Chris, you already talked about, the Chernobyl limited series.
Yeah. How's that?
Yeah, it is very good. It is very disturbing. But just from the standpoint of a horror fan, there is some really phenomenal makeup of the on the guys who who get radiation poisoning early in the show. It's some really nasty,
disturbing stuff. Is this a piece of historic fiction or some sort of nonfiction?
It's not a documentary per se, but it is a retelling of the actual events.
Real people, or are they just fake people?
Everybody's speaking English, so it's not that realistic, but it's...
Let me rephrase. Is it like the movie Titanic where they just make up a bunch of characters?
No. They're all based on real people, to my, my understanding. I'm sure there are people who are amalgamations of different people. You follow the story of one firefighter who responded to the initial call and his wife. And I'm sure that is... And I could be wrong, but I'm guessing that's probably like a representation of all different stories about the guys who went there. They just chose to distill it down into one.
Yeah, and the whole thing opens up with this one dude committing suicide, who is part of the investigation, and that's what he actually did. Ended up committing suicide. So
So they flash forward before they get back.
You start with that guy committing suicide and then flash back to what happened at Chernobyl.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, Eric, but I was amazed. I did not realize the extent to which the Brits had infiltrated the Soviet government.
Right. I made a comment about that on Facebook the first time I was watching. I was like, it's amazing how much English they speak in Russia.
Well, it's not even Russia; it's the Ukraine. So they should.
That work? Can people watch?
Yeah, well, we know they put a Scotsman in charge of Americans, their submarine.
It's like it's an English speaking presentation. The only time you don't actually hear English is, I believe, they used actual recordings of the emergency calls when the fire happened at the power plant.
Okay, interesting.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, since it's not. You know, found footage, you know, they can do it in any language they want. I mean,
well, no, but what's funny is then they'll do the clips from the TV and that'll still be in Russian, you know, as opposed to having re-recorded. So it's a little weird that sometimes they use Russian, sometimes they don't. I will say
it should be technically Ukrainian.
I will
say Ukrainians.
Well, they were all Soviet at the time. I will say, dog lovers be warned of episode 4.
Oh dear. So where can people watch Chernobyl?
I was just looking, though. It's right now it's HBO streaming. I don't know if it's going to be anywhere else, like if it's going to be on Hulu or something like that.
HBO at this point pretty much hangs on to their own stuff, don't they?
Yeah, or at least what they're going to do is
Release stuff on disc. It's just that you only fucking find their shows on their shows, on their station, I mean.
Right, so I'm guessing they'll have it available if you subscribe to HBO Go or HBO Now. You could watch it there. Otherwise, you know, wait within a year. I'm sure it'll be on disc.
But to be honest, Abe, I mean, you can just subscribe for HBO Now or HBO Go for 1 month for $15 bucks.
Yeah,
and that's cheaper than a movie ticket.
Yeah, to be honest, that's the only reason I still have HBO
on still, now that Game of Thrones is over, is I'm going to finish watching out this series before I turn it off.
Okay. How many episodes?
Yeah, because it's a weekly series. They're not dropping the whole thing like Netflix, so you have to wait. And then after the 8 or 6 episodes come out, then it'll be on HBO Go or Now permanently, basically, and then you can watch binge it after that. But right now, okay. You can binge it.
Right, and this isn't, though, also, it's also, though, not a show that necessarily benefits from a weekly viewing. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's a sudden, oh my God, it was the Americans all along, dun, 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 you know, twist, and you get a week to speculate.
Actually, me and Eric what will happens? Always say it never is worth waiting. It showed up.
Yeah, but you're wrong. Just like you're wrong about spoilers.
The Americans and the regards.
So I'd say it's not structured in a way that, you know, is intended to have a lot of conversation week to week.
True.
It's just a historical kind of documentation of what happened. And yeah, there's some terrible stuff. It's like I said, well worth looking at if you have any interest in it.
It's because the Reds are evil.
Well, that's a running cover as a running thing there. I left. There's a scene where the guy who commits suicide, somebody who works with him, is arrested by the KGB for investigating, and he really needs them to finish the investigation because there's other reactors. They need to know what went wrong, and so he goes to the head of the KGB and says, "Hey, my colleague was arrested." And the head of the KGB says, "And yeah, it's like, I don't know anything about that." You know, he said, "You know, I got all these underlings. I run this, you know, the whole country." And he said, "You know, we're not this evil organization that everyone thinks that we are. You know, that's a big, it's a big country. There's all this stuff going on. We're just trying to keep people safe." He said, "Well, I really need a release because I need to, you know, complete this investigation." And he said, "Well, I'll look into it." Said, "Oh, well, her name is," he said, "Don't worry, I know her name."
Yeah, right. So he was just lying his ass off.
Oh, yeah, so he was, right, exactly. So he's completely involved and, you know, knew exactly what it was, you know, and that's kind of the point, is that there's so much of it is, you know, they're trying, so many people die because they're trying to avoid embarrassment.
Yeah, yeah, they're basically like,
problem?
Yeah, oh, yeah,
what problem?
Cover it all up.
So right, they don't want to admit how bad it is.
The person that kills themselves, is it because they just become depressed because of what they're doing, or are they part of the problem?
We haven't gotten there yet.
Gotcha. No. I imagine it's probably partially because they had horrible cancer.
Yeah, it's probably also part two.
Oh, that's a good point. Speaking of the Reds are evil, 30th anniversary of Tiananmen Square. Bastards. Now, that should be made into a movie, but of course that never will be because everybody is owned by Chinese money.
Also not completely wrong right now, but we've talked about that on the podcast before too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very true.
All right,
let's give us final thoughts, right, Eric?
Yes.
All right, so why don't you start, Eric? Yeah, go ahead.
I like Brightburn. I would recommend it. I'm not gonna push people to make it to the theater to see it because I don't think it's that kind of movie, but I would encourage people to watch it at some point. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was good.
All right, very good. For me, I probably liked the film the most out of everybody. But I'm not going to say it's a great film. I think it was just a fun film, meaning it was very entertaining from start to finish. And if you just want really good entertainment, I felt it was really good entertainment. Will it be on my best of at the end of the year? Possibly, because, again, the entertainment factor alone was enough to make me give it a big thumbs up. So it's a possibility it could be on my top 10, top 20 at the end of the year. Again, though, we're a long way from then. However, I would recommend seeing it in the theater because the landscapes of Kansas, or what is actually Georgia where they filmed it, is very beautiful. There's some scenes that are really good for the big screen. But either way, catch it when you can. Mike.
Yeah, I like the film. Right now, I have to go back and check, but we seem to be living in the year of, that was an okay movie. You know, we're not even quite halfway through the year yet. I'm sure there's going to be some great stuff coming out. but I don't, haven't found a lot that really are hitting home right now. This had the potential, didn't quite get there, but I did like it. I did enjoy it. I will watch it again, I am sure. Whether I buy a disc or not, we'll see. Like I said, a lot will depend on what comes with the disc. I really would like to see a sequel, but I'm also perfectly fine to let this stay as it is, because there are going to be problems with the sequel. So I guess I'm more interested in some of the other idea of evil versions of superheroes, I guess, is really more than following up this particular character.
Right, right. Make the video game in Justice League. Very cool. All right, Abe.
I thought this movie was well done overall. I did have some issues. I might have been a little harder on the character by Elizabeth Banks, but I think it's more of her being lack of genre savvy than her being stupid.
She did. So she was the star of Slither, and that was as genre as you
No, I'm saying genre savvy in terms of not catching on to certain clues and things about the villain's nature and stuff like that.
You mean how the character was written? Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Abe has a script problem rather than an actress problem, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The actress was fantastic. I thought everybody performed it well. Everyone did the roles perfectly. I thought I really liked the character of Kyle. I think he was my favorite. But characters and some writing was a little weak here and there. Stupid. Calling the mother stupid was a little much. I definitely have to agree. I think it's more of her catching on certain clues and stuff like that. I think it's just a thing I have issues with a lot of characters in genre films that make such obvious mistakes and just kind of get to me. But overall, it's still a film I think you should check out. It's going to be in theaters maybe for just a little bit longer. Even if you don't catch it, you can still probably on streaming, you'll get a chance then. It's still worth a watch. It's got some cool ideas. It's got some pretty gory kills and some nice little twists here and there. But for me, the buildup of this superhero psychotic meltdown was much more interesting than the actual madness ensues. But still, I said check it out while you still can. And if you don't catch it, there'll be a lot of chances.
All right, very well. I will state that both Leeds, Banks, and Denham show that they can carry a film. Obviously, they're usually second tier. They're not Scarlett Johansson and Brad Pitt want by most directors or producers. But they show every time that they're on the screen in this film, never mind usually their other work, that they're solid. And I would like to see both of them in more films going forward.
I think Denham could actually be a main character, honestly. I think he can do a pretty good job, in my opinion.
I think you're absolutely right. He could be someone that could be, like, if not a lead, could be a co-lead in an ensemble cast type film. So I would agree with you for sure. He really hit it out of the ballpark in this film, I felt. Absolutely. All right, sounds good. So, once again, 2019, Brightburn, James Gunn produced film. His fingerprints are all over this film, even though he didn't write it or direct it. But this is his baby. It did make its money back and a little more, and generally receive more positive than negative reviews by critics, and it seems like most fans are enjoying it, even though it seems like in our circle on Facebook, our horror groups that we're in, not many people are talking about it, which is kind of surprising. I thought a lot of folks would have had seen it, but for the reason, it's just another one of those films that everybody will say in 7 months from now when it comes on VOD, oh, have you seen this film, Brightburn? very well. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us up?
All right, thanks for tuning in. Let's just talk about Brightburn. Come back next week. We will have a new topic. Sleeping, you're on your tippy toes, creeping.
she's scared of me? I mean, I don't see what she sees, but maybe it's because I'm wearing your cologne.